And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X-1.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
It's 11:10. Ooh, a later start than normal here, Lisa Wolf, on the WGN Radio Theater. It's January 24th, 2016. And guess what?
What?
This is program 46.
46.
And I can do my math because last night when we were here, it was program 45.
Okay, so we're good. Ah,
I like that.
Your math skills are improving.
Maybe I should teach math. Is there a college here in Chicago would want me to teach math? I doubt it. But I would, I can be bought.
Right.
Hey,
you know, we all have multiple careers.
I can certainly be bought. Yeah, Lisa has about 15 different jobs. Mike has like 25 different jobs. He's the Mad Hatter.
Well, he's the Mad anyway.
He is the Mad Hatter. And we have Mike Costella's here, the executive producer, Lisa Wolf, my co-host, and Dan Long, the best in the business in there, our producer. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Good evening.
Good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, good to see you too.
Yep, and we're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. I got it right.
Yes,
yesterday
you did.
I said 10 p.m. a bunch of times.
Well, we do get here at 10, but we will not be on the air until 11.
Right. Lisa says I have to be here an hour before the show.
Otherwise, Lisa says.
She gives me a really hard time.
Well, you do come a long way.
Yeah.
To get here.
Listen,
so.
I don't want to have any. You're tough. You work out. I don't want to have any problems with you.
Yeah, I'm tough.
You might throw me to the mat like Ronda Rousey and flip me. You know, she's MMA. This girl over here. We have classic radio shows for you all the way to 2 a.m. And here's the lineup. Have Gun, Will Travel, one of the best adult westerns of all of the golden age of radio and TV. Was, of course, on television, very popular show on TV. We have that for you. Then it's the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show, a great comedy with variety and song, all that. Special guest Jane Wyman on that. And then a good spy government drama on Dangerous Assignment starring Brian Donlevy from 1949. That's our lineup for this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming drama Miracles from Heaven about a young girl suffering from a rare digestive disorder who finds herself miraculously cured. Miraculously cured after surviving a terrible accident.
Okay, so here's how it works. We're going to give away a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza. The number to call, 312-981-7200. And here's a hint. Lisa's talking about a celebrity. And here's a hint. This actress portrayed Dr. Eve Sachs, who is Matthew McConaughey's doctor in Dallas Buyers Club.
We ran the blood test several times. Here's some information about HIV and AIDS that you might find informative. And these are your test results.
This is a terrific actress. I really like this girl.
I agree with you.
All right. If you can tell us who this actress is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We appreciate that you're listening. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip. One more time.
We ran the blood test several times. Here's some information about HIV and AIDS that you might find informative, and these are your test results.
We have Diane on the line from Chicago. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great. We're so glad you called in. Can you tell me who that celebrity is?
Yes, that would be the lovely Jennifer Garner.
She is lovely. And I don't know if you happen to have heard about this new movie, Miracles from Heaven, but just from watching clips and the trailer, it literally tugs at your heartstrings. So you'll have to check it out if you're a Jennifer Garner fan.
Oh, I will.
Okay, you are a winner. You have won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best, the best deep dish pizza. You can visit one of their 40 Chicagoland locations and check them out at loumalnati's.com. Hope you enjoy a great pizza on us, okay?
I sure will. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
See, Lisa says certificate. Let's see, how many vowels is that?
Four.
I mean,
syllables.
Syllables. Certificate. Four. I say card. Gift card.
Gift card.
See, I keep it.
You like to keep it short and not
short,
repeat things.
Sweet. Right. I don't want to seem like a hog on the radio.
Well, you know, I do this for Lou Malnati's. It makes it sound like a much bigger prize.
Certificate.
Certificate.
It takes four times as long to say certificate.
Well, then I'm going to just keep on doing that.
But that's okay, Lisa. You know why?
Why?
Because you are the lovely Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Carl. I'll take it.
And you could do whatever you want.
That's right.
That's right. We don't want to mess with Lisa Wolf. You know what? Dan works out in there. I can tell. He pumps weights. But you could take him. I bet you. You could take him.
Sure, I could.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Yeah, she's pretty tough.
Yeah, check out the pictures. You can see how tough I am.
I know. Go look at Lisa Wolf on her website, lisawolf.com.
No. Go to Facebook, where we post there all the time. Dan loves posting pictures there, right, Dan? On their Facebook page.
All right. So why don't we get into the first classic radio show? That is what we do here, classic radio.
Yes,
primarily.
Primarily.
We have a terrific Western to start things off. And I know your dad, Mr. Matenki, likes the Westerns.
He does.
If he's listening, Mr. Matenki, this is for you. This Western began on television. This is really odd. This show actually started on TV. And then it was so popular on TV, it migrated to radio a year later. It started on TV in 57, then went to radio in 1958. Now, Richard Boone played him on television. You know, we're talking about Paladin here.
Right.
And John Daner played him on radio, so two different actors. I think Richard Boone was just too busy doing the TV show. I think they did want him to play it on the radio, and he just was too busy. Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek, wrote 24 of these episodes, which was, you know, pretty cool. I mean, it's a big name, Gene Roddenberry. And also Bruce Geller, who created Mission Impossible, he wrote a bunch of them. And Julian Fink, one of the lead writers on the Dirty Harry movie. So this had a great, you know, a great stable of writers writing these episodes. Now, Paladin was a former Union cavalry officer, graduate of U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and he was a decorated Civil War veteran, well-schooled, highly cultured. He became rich as a hired gun at very high stakes. Everyone that is listening probably have seen Have Gun Will Travel, but we have a radio broadcast for you now. I think you're really going to dig this. This is from February 8th, 1959. It's called The Killer's Widow. It stars John Daner. Here's part one of Have Gun, Will Travel.
I came here to tell you I'm not an executioner. It doesn't feel good to kill a man. Not a bit good. But your husband didn't leave me any choice.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Sounds wonderful. And then, Mr. Paladin?
And then, perhaps a cordial for a nightcap.
I do believe I'll be looking forward to this evening a great deal, Mr. Paladin.
And I, too.
Mr. Paladin!
Oh, what?
I've been looking for you. I find you.
Hey, boy, your timing is abysmal.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Paladin, but credit must go to mailman. He just brings special delivery letter for you.
Excuse me, my dear. What? Oh, say, I'll meet you in the lounge later.
Well.
Oh, she a very high dungeon.
Dudgeon.
Esau, that's what I say. Very high dungeon.
Dear Mr. Paladin, I need you for an important assignment immediately, and so forth. There's a $3,000 bonus for you upon completion. Something. I appreciate you seeing you at your earliest convenience. So, very truly yours, E.J. Randolph, Coloma Bank. Coloma.
Oh, you there not long ago, yes?
Yes, about 2 months ago.
Oh, yeah. Here are your 2 tickets for opera tonight.
I'll take them back, hey boy.
Yes. What?
I'm leaving for Coloma tonight.
Oh, must be real big trouble to interfere with lady who was almost kissed.
And wire Mr. Randolph. Tell him I'm on my way.
Dandruff bothers most men, most women too, so listen. Today you can get rid of embarrassing dandruff in just 3 minutes. Yes, with Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Unsightly dandruff's gone in 3 minutes. It's the quickest, easiest of all leading shampoos. That's not all. Using Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep embarrassing dandruff away. Simply apply in the unique Fitch manner. Before you wet hair, rub in 1 minute. This way, Fitch shampoo penetrates right down to the scalp. Next, add water. Lather 1 minute to wash every trace of dandruff out of your hair. Then rinse 1 minute. All that loosened dandruff goes down the drain. In 3 minutes with Fitch, one rubbing, one lathering, one rinsing, dandruff's gone. And never forget, gentle Fitch can also leave your hair up to 35% brighter. To get rid of dandruff problems forever, brighten hair too. Use Fitch regularly. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today, only 59 cents.
Coloma was a poor excuse for a town. It's out alone and awkward in the center of a dry, scorched plain with a few ranches stretching back towards the low mesas behind it. I'd been there before and I killed a man there. I didn't like the town, I didn't like the people, but Randolph had offered me a lot of money. I found him sitting behind his desk at the bank.
Well, Paladin, sure good to see you.
Hello, Mr. Randolph.
Sit down.
Thank you.
How about a little rye to cut the dust, huh?
Yeah, I don't mind.
Hey, didn't waste any time getting here.
The distance between San Francisco and Coloma is shorter when there's a $3,000 fee involved.
Right to the point. That's what I like about you, Paladin. That's why I sent for you. Well, here's luck.
Thank you. So, what can I do for you, Mr. Randolph?
You did a job for John Griffin about 2 months ago. He hired you to bring back Steve Morrow. Remember him?
You don't forget someone you've killed.
Didn't mean any offense.
No, I'm not offended. Morrow tried to kill me. I had to kill him. Griffin wanted Morrow because Morrow had killed his son. What's that got to do with you?
Morrow robbed this bank before he killed that Griffin boy. He took $30,000.
I still don't see the connection.
Paladin, I've got to have that $30,000 back by the first of the month or I'll lose everything I own.
And you need help.
Yes. Yes, I need help. Badly. 15 years of hard work, building a business and a name for myself, gone, just like that. Gone and signed over to John Griffin.
John Griffin? How does he figure in this?
He's the biggest depositor the bank has. He knows about the stolen money, and he's using that knowledge. He's given me notice that he wants to withdraw $30,000 on the first. If I don't have it, the deed to this building and most of the other property the bank owns will be signed over to him. And I don't have it, Mr. Paladin.
Well, then, that makes my job fairly easy.
Well, how's that?
Find Morrow's widow. She must have the money, or at least know where it is.
I don't think so. She's still living in that cabin up there on the mesa. Well, the sheriff and I have been up a dozen times searching the place, trying to talk her into telling us where it is. She hasn't got the money. If she had it, she'd have left Coloma and gone someplace else to spend it. Either that or at least paid up the back taxes on the farm.
Huh. I thought for sure Rose had that money.
Rose?
Steve Morrow's widow.
You mean Lucy Morrow. Her name's Lucy.
Oh? I'm going to check into the hotel and freshen up a bit.
And then what?
Ride out and talk to Lucy Morrow. Morning, Mr. Randolph.
One of the best westerns of all of radio and television, Have Gun, Will Travel. This is called The Killer's Widow, and it stars John Daner as Paladin. He traveled all over and fought bad guys, Lisa, in this series, and a really terrific, terrific radio and television series. Let's take a break here on the WGN Radio Theater. We'll be right back. All right, Lisa Wolf.
Okay.
This is what's called a live read in the radio biz.
Okay. Are you looking for a luxury apartment complex in the northwest suburbs? Riverside Plaza, located in the heart of downtown Algonquin, may be exactly what you've been searching for. Exquisite design can be found throughout your luxury apartment, from the solid bamboo flooring to the porcelain tile bathrooms, modern kitchen, in-home washer, dryer, and large veranda. You'll have full access to the club lounge with fireplace, game tables, billiards, and television. Host a party in the event room, work out in the fitness center, and park in an indoor heated garage. Seeing is the only true way to appreciate Riverside Plaza, so call John. Set up your appointment. 224-268-6343. That's 224-268-6343. Visit riversidelux.com. That's L-U-X-E.com.
That's the vivacious Lisa Wolf right there. You know, you should try getting in the radio business. You have a very nice voice.
You know,
voice.
I've tried for so many years, and I've just never been able to break in. Someday.
I'll let you be an intern on this show if you'd
one
like.
One day my dream is to be
an intern here.
No, is to be an intern at WGN right here in the Showcase studio.
Yes. Well, your dream has come true, Lisa.
Honest
you
to
are
goodness,
a,
it's true,
you're
though.
An amazing intern here
well,
on the
Thank
WGN
you. I will
Radio
hope
Theater.
To work my way up the ladder.
To co-host.
One day,
and
you never know.
There you are. You're the co-host. That was quick.
Yes.
That was fast. You
want
to talk
you.
About getting up the ladder fast.
How does the salary change?
No.
No, didn't think so.
No, there's no. Did you say salad? Yeah, I can get you a salad.
How does it? You did get me
That's
a salad.
That's about it. All right, let's get back to this now because Dan Long's looking at me. He's like, you know what, Carl? Get back into the show. We're going to run out of time. So I do what Dan says because he's
do
bigger
too.
Than me, too. All right, let's tune this in. Part two of Have Gun, Will Travel.
Yes?
Good afternoon, Ms. Morrow. I'm Paladin.
Did you think I could forget you, Mr. Paladin?
No, I suppose not. I'd like to talk to you, if I may.
I'm going to work on the rose garden. You can talk there if you wish.
Yes, I noticed them as I rode up. They're beautiful.
They are. It's an eastern variety, Calinaris.
Oh. Must be rather difficult to grow them out here.
Oh, it's worth the trouble to have one lovely thing here. They were a present from Steve. He brought me some cuttings after one of his trips back east.
Why have you stayed on here?
Simple. There's nowhere else to go and no money to go with.
Your husband took $30,000 from the Coloma Bank. It's never been found.
This house was turned inside out. Do you think I'd be living here like this if I had $30,000?
Perhaps not.
I don't know anything about that money, Mr. Paladin.
I don't mean to bother you, Mrs. Morrow.
Why do you bother me, then? You knew this before you came out here.
I killed Steve. If it hadn't been me, it would have been somebody else, somewhere else. He was an outlaw, a killer. I suppose I wanted to come here and tell you that I'm not an executioner. I was bringing him in, and he went for his gun. Doesn't feel good to kill a man. Not a bit good.
I know you're not the kind to kill for the sake of another notch on your gun, but Steve was my husband. Please don't come back here again. Or if you have to, wait until I'm gone.
You're leaving?
Yes. They're auctioning the place for $276 back taxes. Oh, don't look so pained. I'll get along. Maybe it'll be best. Get out of here, Paladin. Leave me alone, please.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Morrow. The Griffin Ranch was the same as it had been. Old, solid, and well-kept. Run by a man who was old and solid and tough. A man who had lost one son by Steve Morrow's gun and had one son left. A man who could not forget or forgive.
Well, you look about the same, Paladin. Come on in, set a spell.
I'd just soon sit out here in the fresh air, Mr. Griffin.
Fine, fine. What brings you back to these parts?
$30,000.
Stolen money, eh? A lot of people like to get their hands on that. You ought to have a pretty good idea where it might be.
Why do you say that?
Well, you were the last person to be with that murdering fool. The way I had it figured, Morrow had the money with him when you killed him. I hear you've been living pretty high on the hog up in San Francisco.
Those are harsh words, Griffin.
Oh, now, don't get itchy. I was just only joshing. You wouldn't be back here if you had it.
Steve Morrow didn't have that money when I found him. And according to his wife, he didn't even have it when he left the farm.
You talked to her?
I just came from there.
Well, it takes a lot of nerve for a man to go up and talk to the wife of somebody he killed. Hey, you suppose Steve Morrow hid it on that farm of his?
Mr. Randolph and the sheriff searched it.
I know. Old Randolph's getting fidgety. A while back, he got the idea that Morrow buried the money up on the mesa. You never saw such digging and poking around. I swear the mesa's 10 feet shorter on account of it.
That farm adjoins your property, doesn't it?
Yeah. On the south. Why?
I hear it's up for auction. Should be worth at least a couple of $1,000 to you.
I'll get it for $276, the taxes.
Someone will outbid you at that price.
I don't reckon so, Paladin. Nobody else is going to bid on it. Those who can afford to bid on it don't have any use for that farm.
Randolph might have use for it.
Ah, that old pussyfoot. He wouldn't know how to plant potatoes.
He might know how to dig for stolen money.
Hey, tell me something, Paladin. You working for Randolph?
Maybe. Maybe not.
Ah. You are working for him. I might have known. You know, I'd just as soon the money doesn't get back to the bank.
Oh?
I'd lose about $60,000 in holdings that belong to it. But those holdings will be mine come the first of the month. Well, that's not a pretty way to talk, but at least it's the truth.
I see. What happens to Randolph, then?
Out in the cold where he deserves to be. If I ran my ranch like he runs that bank, I'd have been out of business a long time ago.
Well, getting close to sundown, I think I'll be heading back to town.
No, Paladin, I hate to see a man like you working on the dark side of the fence. I thought you always roamed the green fields.
Which are the green fields, Griffin?
Mine are.
By the way, you buy that farm just for the taxes. Steve Morrow's widow won't get a cent.
Well, now, ain't that a downright shame?
She didn't kill your son, Griffin.
No, but her husband did. All I hope is that his kin are gonna suffer on account of it. That's how I feel about Morrow and her.
Come in.
Paladin?
Well, Mr. Randolph.
You make it a habit, staying up this late?
I do my best thinking when the town's settled for the night.
You've covered a lot of ground today. Getting discouraged?
Did you come here to discourage me?
Yeah, there's a lot of territory between Coloma and the Mesa. Morrow could have hidden that money anywhere.
Not without telling his wife.
Now, since when does a killer stop to worry about his wife?
Randolph, Whatever you want to say about Morrow, he loved his wife. He'd have wanted to make sure she was provided for him. Why, he even spoke about her when he was dying. His last words were, Rose, tell her that... Wait a minute. Tell her...
What are you talking about?
Randolph, that money's up there on the farm.
You mean she does have it?
She doesn't know it, but it's there.
Where is it, then? Why, we've torn that place apart.
You just didn't dig in the right spot. I'm going up there now and get your money. You wait here.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning.
And I'll be digging by 2.
Now there's a luxury car that fits regular parking spaces in ordinary garages that's easy to handle in traffic. It's America's compact luxury car, the Ambassador by Rambler. Now, medium-priced car buyers can have the room, comfort, luxury, and performance they expect in a fine car, but without excessive length, width, and bulk. If other medium-priced cars have sized and priced you out of the market, then you owe it to yourself to test our best, American Motors' finest, the luxuriously compact Ambassador. Note the quality construction and careful attention to detail. Thrill to the superbly responsive 270-horsepower V8 engine. Enjoy luxury features like individually adjustable front seats that glide back and forth separately. 5 minutes at the wheel of an Ambassador will change your ideas about luxury cars. Test our best, the Ambassador V8 by Rambler. Finest car ever priced so close to the lowest. See, drive the luxurious Ambassador now at Rambler dealers.
When I dismounted at Lucy Morrow's, I thought I heard a horse nicker in a nearby clump of cottonwoods. I waited, but all was quiet except for the wind through the trees. Lucy Morrow was a light sleeper. She answered my second knock.
What do you want?
Put the shotgun down, Miss Morrow.
What are you doing here this time of night?
The money. It's here on the farm.
We've been through that before, Paladin. They ripped my place apart. Every floorboard, every inch of this cabin, the yard's full of holes. You saw it this afternoon.
I know, Mrs. Morrow, but...
The money isn't here. Look, this is my last night in the only home I ever had, and I don't mean to be bothered.
Mrs. Morrow...
Now get away from here before I blast that shirt right off your back.
You wouldn't have to leave tomorrow if I find the money.
I'm not wasting any more words with you.
Miss Morrow... In your rose garden, is there a bush not doing well?
Paladin, it's late and it's cold.
Answer me, is there?
Well, yes, there is one, but what's that got to do with the money?
Flowers need soil at their roots, Ms. Morrow, not gold.
What?
If you get me a shovel, I'll show you what I mean. You know, it took me a while to... figure out that a dying man wouldn't call his wife Rose. Her name was Lucy. Oop. Hold the lamp a little closer. I think we've got it. Now. Yeah, this is it. The leather bag from the Coloma Bank.
We'll open it.
Yeah.
Gold coins.
$30,000 worth.
Here in the rose garden all the time.
Drop that. Raise your hand.
What?
Come on. Do what I say. Good. Now just stand steady. All right, Cleet. Let's move in. Keep that light high, woman. So as we can see you both.
Lucy.
Yes?
When I say the word, throw that lamp at them high, eye level, then hit the ground fast. I'll say when.
All right.
Now.
No more. Don't shoot again.
Just stand easy, mister.
You shot him. You shot my boy.
I didn't have much choice.
Cleet. Cleet, boy. Are you hurt bad?
I'll be all right, Paul.
I'll get you for this, Paladin.
Don't try anything foolish, Mr. Griffin. You're already in enough trouble.
I'm in trouble.
Trying to hijack stolen money... Trespassing, attempted murder.
Paladin, there's someone coming.
Yeah, I heard him. I think it's Randolph.
Randolph?
He knew I was coming out here. He probably couldn't stand waiting in town. After all, the money belongs to his bank.
Paladin! Paladin, you all right?
Yes, we're all right. We're over here, Mr. Randolph.
Well, what happened? What was all the shooting?
Well, there was a little discussion as to who was going to get that bank's money. I won.
You mean you have the money? You found it, all of it?
I think so, here.
Oh, good. Good, that's it right enough.
Now, in regards to my fee, Mr. Randolph.
Yes?
I want you to give it to Lucy.
What?
Lucy?
I think a woman ought to be able to keep her home if she wants to. At the auction tomorrow, you can decide whether you want to stay or leave this charming town.
Thank you, Paladin.
As for you, Griffin, get your boy back to your own ranch and bandage that leg of his. I don't think Lucy Morrow cares one way or the other what happens to you. Mr. Randolph wants to bring charges later. That's up to him. As for myself, I'm saying goodbye to Coloma for the last time.
You're back, Mr. Paladin.
And ready to see the city bright and shining?
Oh, best you go away 2-3 more days, maybe.
Why should I?
Her.
Who?
Her lady over there. He very unhappy when you will not take her to the opera.
Well, didn't you explain it was business?
Oh, yes, sir.
Important business?
Yes, sir, but her business more important to her, I think, Mr. Paladin. He maybe kill you, huh?
I hope not. Well, the best way is the direct way. Excuse me.
Hmm? Oh.
I hope you missed me. You did miss me. Oh. I have no other cheek to turn.
Then kindly turn yourself around and leave me alone.
I can hardly do that. You see, I've thought of nothing and no one but you all this time.
Really?
Really.
Am I to believe?
You are to believe only that which will make you feel better and me feel better and both of us enjoy a lovely evening together. That, to me, would be a simple solution.
So?
Dinner?
Well...
Please.
You are a very convincing man.
The current issue of TV Radio Mirror has a feature story on the man who portrays Paladin every Sunday night on CBS Radio, Mr. John Daner. Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed by Norman McDonnell and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy. Tonight's story was written by Albert Alley and adapted for radio by John Dawson. Featured in the cast were Vic Perrin, Eleanor Tannen, and Joseph Kearns. Hugh Douglas speaking. Join us again next week for Have Gun, Will Travel.
All right, that is a great Western adventure of Have Gun, Will Travel, Killer's Widow, starring John Daner, February 8th, 1959. Participating sponsors on that is heard on CBS. Let's take a break here on the WGN Radio Theater, and Lisa and I and Mike Castell and Dan Long will all return after these words. Thank you, Roger Badish. If I could have a voice like Roger Badish. It's like I was talking about this last night about David Jennings. Where do these deep voice guys get this?
They find them all for WGN.
It's just
they...
got those, the tones, man. Can
you know
imagine?
What? Roger has more than a great voice, though. Roger is a smart cookie.
I know it's
there.
Not just his voice. He's a talented actor, too. He does these radio dramas. What's the next one, Roger?
Auditions are Wednesday. Next one, I believe, is February, I want to say, 24th or 27th.
Ah.
Something like that.
What are we doing? Fibber McGee and Molly?
No, even though I would love to. I'd love Fibber McGee. We're doing The Origin of the Lone Ranger.
Oh, right.
And an episode of The Thin Man.
Oh, yeah, The Thin Man.
It's going to be fun.
Dashiell Hammett created The Thin Man.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a trivia question for you.
Okay.
He created The Thin Man. He created two other detectives.
Ooh.
Who are they? Two others. I mean, I know you're going to know one of them.
Oh, real hard-nosed guy.
Dashiell Hammett.
Yes, 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 yes.
I'll give you a hint. Humphrey Bogart played him in the movies.
In the
Maltese Falcon. Come on. Sam Spade.
And the other one was played by, in the movies.
No, it was never in the movies.
No, there was another actor in a different.
Mm-hmm.
I could have
not sure where you're going with this.
You
derailed.
I think
the train has derailed.
Well, the train derailed about 5 hours ago. Where have you been?
So Dashiell Hammett created three detectives.
Right.
The Thin Man,
mm-hmm.
The Fat Man, and Sam Spade.
Okay.
Yeah, he created Fat Man specifically for radio, though, and because ABC came to him and said, we need, the Thin Man's doing so well on radio, mm-hmm. and Sam Spade's doing so well on radio. Create something for us. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, well, the Thin Man? How about the Fat Man?
Now, the Thin Man, if I remember correctly,
Nick
didn't
and Nora
he only,
Charles.
He only wrote...
Yeah, he wrote a few of them.
Yeah. They were a movie first, then they became the radio
Absolutely.
Series.
Yes. William Powell and Myrna Loy.
Right. There were only three movies, I want to say.
I don't know. There was a few, and they were very popular. And they really weren't detectives. They were really just kind of amateur detectives. They just...
very socialites.
Yeah, they were socialites, right? They were rich socialites in New York City.
I love their dog, Asta.
And Asta, right. So I would say you get a B+.
Give me a B-.
Right,
B-.
Well,
I'm a tough teacher.
Every once in a while, I'm gonna quiz you.
Please do.
Because Roger knows stuff, Lisa.
He does. And if you ask him about Macbeth, he could certainly tell you.
Oh, my gosh.
No. Right, Roger?
No.
Yeah, I went a little crazy today finding some old videos that I'd used in class.
Oh.
And that's why I've forgotten more than I remember. Let's just leave it at that.
All right. Well, thanks,
Roger.
I
will be listening.
Okay, buddy.
Awesome.
Thanks. Appreciate it. This hour, we're going to tune into the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show. Special guest Jane Wyman. And then in our third hour this morning, we'll tune into Dangerous Assignment. So some great classic radio coming your way. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming film Monster Trucks. While its plotline is top secret, it is based on the popular Monster Trucks phenomenon from Paramount Animation.
All right, so this actor, I'll give you a little hint, and if you can get who this actor is, you're going to win a $25 gift
certificate
from Lou Malnati's Pizza, $25 gift certificate. And the number to call, 312-981-7200. All right, this actor starred as Billy Hicks in 1985's St. Elmo's Fire.
You know what it is? It's St. Elmo's Fire. Electric flashes of light that appear in dark skies out of nowhere.
All right. He's done a lot of things, this guy.
I remember that movie
He's a terrific actor. And if you know who that is, call us, 312-981-7200, when a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. All right, we'll be right back.
This is the one and only WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
You know what it is? It's St. Elmo's Fire. Electric flashes of light that appear in dark skies out of nowhere.
Let's talk to Laurel from Elmwood Park. Hi, Laurel.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
Oh, wonderful.
Good. Do you recognize that voice, Laurel?
Yes, that's Rob Lowe.
Definitely Rob Lowe. He'll be in Monster Trucks, and he was really something in St. Elmo's Fire. And you are a winner. You have won a $25 gift card to Lou Malnati's. You can home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza. You can check them out at loumalnati's.com. I hope you have a great pizza. I love it there.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in and for knowing it was Rob
Thanks,
Lowe.
Laurel. Appreciate you calling in and listening to the show. We're here Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m., got it right this time, till 2 o'clock in the morning. We have 3 hours on Saturday and 3 hours on Sunday.
Which is a total of?
6 hours.
There we go.
And in the 6 hours, we play six classic radio shows. And we try to change up the genres a little, a comedy, a detective, a mystery. This one's a kind of a comedy with some music because Dean Martin sings on here. It's going to be fun. And we do this every weekend. Lisa and I come in here. We do it live along with Mike Costella, Dan Long, and Kit Clem here. Kit is actually helping with keeping this show going strong. He's getting us some advertising, right?
Yes.
Right? We're going to get some advertisers. I love it.
Yes.
Kit has it all under control.
You know, this is week 46, so we've
like
made our mark here at WGN, I think.
Yes, we have. All right, so we have Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, right? Coming your way?
Yes.
Should we do this now?
Let's do it.
You want to hear Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis?
I'd rather hear them than you, that's
well,
all.
Well, okay. Yeah, let's do that. You know what? Their guest here is Jane Wyman. The first tune is My Blue Heaven. You know, these guys were together a long time, and then they broke up. They just decided, you know what? We can't work together anymore. They had like $1 billion. They had $1 billion logged. It was like they were going to stay, if they would have stayed together into the future, they had over $1 billion booked and they walked away from it. They just couldn't work together anymore.
You know people like that, that you can't work with.
Yeah. Someone sitting across the table from me.
Get out of here.
Nah. We love each other.
We do.
We're a love-hate.
It's true.
We love it. We love it.
Mostly love.
I know. So let's tune this in. What do you say?
Okay.
Want to hear this? November 30th, 1951, guest Jane Wyman. Here's part one of the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show.
Transcribed.
From Hollywood, we present the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show, featuring their special guest, Jane Wyman, who appears through the courtesy of Warner Brothers, producers of that all-star musical, Starlift. Brought to you by Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor, and Beeman's Pepsin, the gum that's great to chew and good for your digestion, too. And by Anison for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our master of ceremonies.
Good evening, folks. This is Dean Martin. Well, here we are again, back at the same old stand and about to attack show number 9. All the familiar elements are here except one. But Jerry has a good excuse this time. He's down at the doctor's having an ingrown toenail removed. Now, ordinarily, it wouldn't take too long, but this one happens to be in his forehead. So, till Fuss Top gets here, supposing we try a little bit of My Blue Heaven.
When whippoorwills call and evening is nigh, I hurry to my blue heaven. A turn of the right, over a little white light, will lead you to my blue heaven. You'll see a smiling face, fireplace, a cozy room, a little nest nestles where the roses bloom. Just Molly and me, and baby makes three. Oh, we're happy in our blue heaven. I hurry to my blue heaven. We're happy in our see a smiling face, fireplace, a cozy room, a little nest nestles where the roses bloom. Oh, Molly and me, and my baby makes three. We're happy in our blue heaven.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And now, I'd like to introduce...
Just like the in me, and Trigger makes three.
Jerry, what are you doing out here?
What am I doing out here? It says in the script I should come out, look adorable, and get applause.
You have other things to do. Did you bring the suitcase in from the car?
Listen here, Dean. You get someone else to handle that suitcase. I've been working too hard. Look at me, how thin I'm getting. My bones weigh more than I do.
Well, I guess it runs in your family. They're all thin, aren't they?
Well, except my great-great-grandfather.
Your great-great-grandfather is still alive? You certainly come from a family of long livers.
Uncle Fred had a liver 32 inches long.
What a family.
What a family. That's nothing. The other day, my Uncle Louie exploded.
Exploded?
Oh, yeah. He was watching television and sipping some homemade whiskey. Then he hiccuped as he went to light his pipe and poof.
He exploded?
Right in the middle of Kate Smith.
No! Mark, there's no time for this nonsense. We've got to get on to our first guest.
Gee, that's right. Who's it going to be?
Well, I thought that the young genius, Noel Dabney, might pay us a return visit.
Hey, I remember. I played that part. Can I be him again?
All righty. Ladies and gentlemen, some weeks ago, we invited a young genius on our program, a small boy who was graduated from some of our largest universities. In answer to many requests, we are proud to have him with us again. So here he is, the mental wizard, and only 13 years old, Dr. Noel Dabney. And here he is, Dr. Noel. Come on over to the microphone, Noel.
Here, don't you know that microphones carry germs?
Yeah. I didn't mean to aggravate you, Noel, but you seem to be a little on edge. Anything wrong?
Well, frankly, Mr. Martin, I had a terrible argument with my wife.
13 years old and you have a wife? Well, that's a pretty kettle of fish.
Oh, you know her?
Well, Noel, you certainly have packed a lot of living into 13 years. I know you've been making a study of rare diseases. Have you come up with any interesting discoveries?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I've been making a study of Stabile's disease.
Stabile's disease? Well, what's that?
That's when the inside of your eyelid turns to sandpaper.
The eyelid turns to sandpaper?
Yep. And as you keep blinking, your eyeball gradually gets winked down to the size of a pea.
Really? Are there any other symptoms?
Well, last week a fellow was sitting at a bar when all of a sudden the whole eye plopped right in his drink.
What do you call that?
Well, I'd call it an eyeball.
Eyeball! That sounds like a pipe dream to me.
Yeah, they said it was a pipe dream when Professor K. Woody and I said we could cross cantaloupes with pomegranates. But we went on with our experiments, and today, everyone eats canny granny.
No, how does it feel to be a genius at 13?
I'm used to it by now. I've been a genius since I was two.
What were you before that?
The most adorable baby you ever saw.
I'll bet your parents were proud.
No, your parents were proud.
Get out of here.
Oh, no,
Lewis.
You get out.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're very proud indeed to welcome tonight's guest. From her Academy Award-winning performance in Johnny Belinda to her brilliant portrayal in The Blue Veil, she has proven herself to be one of our most capable and versatile actresses. It's my great pleasure to introduce the very lovely Miss Jane Wyman.
Thank you, folks, and thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Wait a minute. Hey, I'm Martin, Dean Martin.
Oh, I'm sorry. Have I made a bad mistake?
You have no idea.
Hey, Dean, you...
Say, this lady's got my hair cut.
Who's he? Tallulah Bankhead's boy?
Good heavens, even strangers get laughs. Say, Dean, who's the skite?
Is that any way to refer to her later?
Who's the skite?
What do you want I should say? Who's the pants?
Jerry. Jerry, I won't have you talking that way to our guest. In my opinion, she's the first lady of the screen.
Good gosh. Can I have your autograph, Miss Pickford?
Why do I always have to apologize for it? I'm sorry, Jane. I guess you've never seen anything like Jerry before.
Well, not since the last time I baited a hook.
See what you've done, Jerry? You meet an important movie star like Jane Wyman, and right away you make her dislike you.
Oh, but I want she should like me. I didn't mean no harm. I was only trying to be funny. I'm a good kid.
Well, gosh, you don't have to cry about it.
Nobody loves me. I walk alone.
There, there, little man. You mustn't.
Why don't you cut it out, Jerry? You're acting like a baby.
You think it's bad being burnt by Jane Wyman?
There are the two of the greatest, guys in the entire business of the Golden Age, right? Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis. Jerry Lewis still going strong today. And, a genius, just a terrific genius, terrific comedian, writer, producer, director. One of the most talented guys that ever lived, really, if you think about it. The movies he directed and all the awards he won and all the years doing the telethon. Yeah. And, of course, Dean Martin. You can't say enough about Dean Martin, the terrific voice and his persona and his...
No, they're a great duo, too.
His flair, you know what I mean? Yeah. His coolness. He was in the Rat Pack, right?
Yep, yep.
Two guys together. They're on the Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis show. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. Let's take a quick break, and then Lisa and I and the whole gang here will return. All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. Very honored to be here every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, with Lisa Wolf, the incomparable Lisa Wolf. How about that? I haven't called you incomparable yet, have I?
No, but honestly, I feel the same way. I feel very honored to be a part of the WGN Radio Theater and working at WGN and working with you and Mike and Dan.
This isn't work. This is fun. We have fun.
It's work and fun.
Work's a four-letter word.
Work and fun. Yes, it is. You got that right.
But this is fun.
It is fun.
Yeah. You know, we're always smiley. We're always happy. Nobody's ever grumpy when we're here, right? Other than I can be a little grumpy.
You can be grumpy, but
Dan,
I don't...
Dan, am I grumpy? I'm not really grumpy, am I?
If you were, I wouldn't say it to your face.
He's very diplomatic.
That's a good answer.
Let me correct something here. Me and Dan are actually working.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
That is true, yeah.
I'm not.
We're just having fun.
I just like playing these shows and listening to them.
But there is a lot of preparation that goes into the show.
Right. There's a lot of preparation H. Yes, I know.
Yes,
there is definitely.
That's what I was referring
to. That
yes,
here.
That's exactly what I meant.
Don't knock it, you know. Preparation H, that's a good product.
Yeah, I'm just not personally familiar with
really?
That product.
Okay, well, you know,
but
it's
I've,
a big brand.
I'm familiar with
it. I mean, you
it.
Worked at Kraft, right?
What does that have to do with
and
it?
There's a big brand, Kraft.
And why are Lisa we bringing
this
up?
Lisa knows her products. She worked at, what was it? You've had a lot of...
I've had a lot of careers.
You have a lot of careers. She's an actress. She worked at Kraft. She's a teacher.
I did not work at Kraft, just to be clear.
You worked at J. Walter Thompson.
Yes, Kraft was
She's
my
She's a
product.
Radio announcer.
Yes.
Or whatever you call this, whatever you do.
Whatever you call me, you
whatever
call
this
me
is
you
do
wish.
Here. She's a mom. She's...
Do all sorts of things
gosh,
on the
you
side.
Got, you wear a lot of hats on that big bulbous... head with two brains. She's
you know, somebody brains. Mentioned on Facebook, what? You know, you're actually a lot better looking than Carl makes you out to be on the radio.
She looks like Quasimodo.
Yeah.
Remember that guy, Quasimodo?
And I said, well,
who
thank
was that
you.
Guy? That was, oh gosh, Charles Laughton. Charles Laughton played Quasimodo.
Yeah, he and I are kind of like the same.
Yeah, you're twins,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
You're a prettier version of Quasimodo.
Yeah, but it's really the same thing,
no,
just the girl version.
You're a beautiful woman. And just because you have two master's degrees in your head is a little bigger because of that. That's
it's
okay.
It's just all in my head.
She wears a hat. You can't see it with a hat on.
I wear hats only when it's cold outside.
She wears a big hat.
Yeah.
All right. So Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Jane Wyman is the guest on this. Are you enjoying this, Lisa?
I do like this a lot.
Yeah. I
you rarely play this.
I know.
Especially with the song and dance kind of thing. That's not you.
It's great hearing Dean Martin sing on this. Sponsored by Chester. Field, although we have removed the cigarette commercials. Let's go back to this broadcast date, November 30th, 1951, the conclusion to the Martin and Lewis Show.
Seriously, Jerry, we should be good friends. I think you're just wonderful in the movies, especially in That's My Boy, when you played the puny misfit.
I saw you in the Paramount picture, Here Comes the Groom, with the... what's his name? You know, that kid that the fellow sings.
Oh, you mean...
Stop! Don't say it! Boy, you should see how mad Dean gets when he hears that name.
What name?
Bing Crosby.
You see, that's the trouble with Dean. He keeps it all inside.
Now, you shouldn't inhibit yourself, Dean. Let it out in song.
Well, that's a thought, Jane. Would you care to set an example for me?
Why, Dean, I'd love to.
You heard the lady, Richard. Let's help Jane Wyman let it out in a song.
I love that feeling that you feel when you feel you've got a feeling that you never, ever felt before. I love that feeling that you feel when you feel your heart a-reeling like it never really reeled before. So kiss me, loving baby, and then let's kiss some more. To kiss you, loving baby, means coming back for more of that feeling that you feel when you feel you've got a feeling that you never, ever felt before. And day by day, I love you more and more. That you never, ever felt before. I love that feeling that you feel when you feel your heart a-reeling like it never really reeled before. So kiss me, loving baby, then let's kiss some more. To kiss you, loving baby, means coming back for more of that feeling that you feel when you feel you've got a feeling that you never, ever felt before.
you, Jane. That sounded as lovely as you look.
Ladies and gentlemen, as most of you know, the motion picture industry has been sending many of its stars all over the country to meet the people. Among these touring stars are the glamorous Marie Lamar and her handsome leading man, Gregory Grant. Their car has just broken down outside of Fenster Junction, Arkansas. And as we find them, they are knocking at the door of an old, isolated farmhouse.
No, Marie, there doesn't seem to be any answer here, Marie.
Well, I guess there's nobody there.
There probably isn't a living thing for miles around. Well, I've got an idea. I'll try my hog call. Suey, suey, suey. Tell me, son, what's your name?
I'm not allowed to talk to strangers.
But we're not strangers. We're your friends. Can you talk to us?
Oh, all righty. My name is Reuben Reuben. I'm 18 years old. I'm at the head of my class kindergarten. I can read aloud. I must go now to separate the milk from the cream and the hens from the roosters. Good day.
Reuben, if I ask you a question, will you promise to give me an honest answer?
Sure. What is it?
Are you for real?
Hey, I know that fella that says that. Ain't he the same one that hollers, I made a bobo?
That's right.
You know, I heard that fella on the radio. Yes, sir, he sure gets off some Lulus. I'm telling you, he sure gives me a boot.
Well, you think he's funny?
Heck no.
Gosh, Gregory, smell the country air. Isn't it just glorious?
It's invigorating, Marie. I sure envy you. Reuben, this farm life must be wonderful.
There's nothing like it. Every day I walk through my fields, pitch my hay, milk the cows, feed the chickens, tend the hogs, churn the butter. Out in the air from 5 a.m. to 7 p.m. Then I come back to my little house and say to myself, eh.
Well, look, Reuben, it's a long way to town. How would you like company tonight?
Sounds right good. Guess we're alone out here. You know, I ain't seen a gal in 10 years.
Really?
No kidding. Now, let's see. Where'll I put you fellas?
Wait a minute. Just wait a minute. I'm a girl.
No.
And all the time I thought you were just a sweet-smelling boy.
Reuben, as long as we're going to stay here, let's go into the house.
Sure, come on in.
Gregory, just look at this place. Why, it's a pigsty.
Make the best of it, Marie. I'm going to hang up my clothes. Where's the closet?
Closet? What's closet?
Well, a closet's a... Well, it's like a very small room.
I know what you mean, buddy, but you'll have to walk out back like the rest of us.
Gregory, let's go before this idiot drives me out of my mind.
Gosh, ma'am, I sure hate to have a pretty girl like you mad at me. I'm going to go, too.
You're going to go, too?
Sure, I changed my mind about girls. Marie, I'm with you.
Well, I thought this would happen. It never fails after they've seen Marie.
How you gonna keep him down on a farm after he's seen Marie?
Gonna keep him away from Vine Street, running around and hating the town. How'll he get along there without his cow? That's a mystery.
One look at Marie, and with the farm I withdrew. Why should I pitch hay when I can stop pitching?
Are you gonna keep him down on the farm?
you very much. Folks, I guess everybody has a memory of their first visit to a theater. And as for me, my first was my best. I didn't know why Mom and Dad were all excited because some guy named Al Jolson was playing at the local vaudeville house, and he didn't mean anything to me, but when the lights dimmed and this little man with the burnt cork makeup dropped to one knee and started to sing, I found myself laughing and crying at the same time. Years later, I was privileged to meet the great Jolie and found him to be as great a person as he was an entertainer. I know Al is pretty busy making heaven a happier place to live in, and I'm sure he won't mind if I take a crack at the song he sang that memorable day. So, Dick, a little rockabye music, please.
Rockabye, my baby, with a Dixie melody. Now when you croon, you're croon a tune to the heart of Dixie. Just hang that cradle, oh, mammy mine, right on the Mason Dixon line. Then swing it from Virginia to Tennessee with all the love that's in you. Weep no more, my lady. Sing that song for me, so soft and low, just as though you had me on your knee. A million baby kisses I'll deliver if you would only play the Swanee River. Well, rockabye, my rockabye, baby, with a Dixie melody. Weep no more, my lady. Sing that song for me, so soft and low, just as though you had me on your knee. A million baby kisses I'll deliver if you would only play that Swanee River. Well, rockabye, my rockabye, baby, with a Dixie melody.
Dean, that song you just sang was beautiful.
That song you just sang? What kind of talk is that?
What's the trouble, boys? You having an argument?
Oh, Dean don't like the way I talk. He wants I should speak different.
He wants I should speak different. That's as bad as over the fence, throw the baby some milk.
Don't mind him, Jane. I want to thank you for being such a good sport tonight.
Dean, I enjoyed every hour of it. Good night, fellas, and good night, folks.
Good night, Jane.
And so, folks, hope to see you all again next week. And until then, this is Dean Martin.
And Jerry Lewis reminding you that we appear on radio through the courtesy of Hal Wallace Productions, producers of our soon-to-be-released picture, Sailor Beware.
Good night, folks.
Night, everybody.
Hollywood, you have just heard transcribed the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show. Written by Ed Simmons and Norman Lear with Mort Lachman. Produced and directed by Dick Mack, with music under the direction of Dick Stabile. Brought to you by Dentine, the gum with breathtaking flavor. And Beeman's Pepsin, the gum that's great to chew and good for your digestion, too. And by Anacin, for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Did you hear who they said one of the writers on that show was? The great Norman Lear. Norman Lear did a million, you know, different television shows. I think he was either one of the creators or co-creator or head writer on All in the Family.
That's what I was thinking.
And
of
so
too.
Many other things. And so, yeah, the Martin and Lewis Show, terrific episode, November 30th, 1951. Guest Jane Wyman, who did some singing on this program as well. Heard on NBC, sponsored by Anacin and Chesterfield. We took the cigarette commercials out. Jimmy Wallington doing the announcing on that. Hope you enjoyed the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show. Let's take a quick break. Then we'll be back here on the WGN Radio Theater. There's our bouncy theme for a bouncy Lisa. Lisa's very bouncy.
It's yeah. All this bubbly water. It's getting to my brain.
Yeah. Did you have a sit and spin when you were a kid? Remember
yeah,
that
I
game?
I still have it.
Do you?
A sit and spin?
A sit and spin?
We have it.
You get out of here.
No,
you
I
still
have a,
do?
Yeah.
A sit and
it's
spin.
It's yellow and you sit on it.
And it has like stripes on it or something
got,
like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's got like red
do you remember
stripes
that?
On it.
When I was a kid, my favorite toy I had was a big wheel. Remember that?
Oh, the bikes? The
yeah,
little
they had
bikes,
the big
wheel,
in the front.
Yeah, of course.
And then I had a G.I. Joe. I never forget. I had it, and mine talked. You pulled the string.
Yes,
and it was like,
we had that.
Yes, Commander, or something like that. It sounded like Roger Badish saying that. Yes, Commander.
I had Twirlo paint.
What is that?
Twirlo paint. This machine, it spins, and you put the paint on it while it spins, and it makes really pretty pictures.
I know one thing you had, a yellow telephone that used
I
to
did.
Call radio stations
like a banana
on.
Phone,
Used
sort
to call
of.
Radio stations on, try to win
yes,
stuff.
I still call radio
you
stations
still do?
And try to
Very
win.
Cool.
I just choose not to call WGN.
You'd be like, hi, this is Lisa Wolf from...
Hi.
WGN Radio Theater. I'm trying to win something on
I'm trying to win a
Bill
Lou
Malnati's
gift certificate because, you know,
or
I love
Steve
the pizza.
Steve Cochran's show or somebody else's show. I don't think they would let you win. You wouldn't be eligible.
Well,
I don't think.
Use my real name.
This is true. Right. Oh, so are you saying you're dishonest,
No, I'm just
Lisa?
Kidding. I wouldn't do it on this station.
No, of course not. All right. This is the WGN Radio Theater. It's Hour 3. Good morning. And this is Show 46. Show 40. We've done 46 of these three-hour shows.
It's amazing,
and
really.
And if you count our Thanksgiving show, it's actually 47.
That's what I was
but we're not
you.
Counting the special Thanksgiving show. All right, we have Dangerous Assignment starring Brian Donlevy that's coming your way in about 3 minutes. But first, our Celebrity Scoop segment. Dum, dum,
dum, dum, dum, dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the upcoming sci-fi drama Midnight Special about a father and son who go on the run after learning that his child possesses special powers.
Very cool. All right, we're going to give you a hint here in a second as to who this celebrity is. And if you can guess who she is, you're going to win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza. The number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Now, this actress portrayed Mary Jane Watson to Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker in 2002's Spider-Man.
Wow, great reflexes. Thanks.
No problem.
Hey, you have blue eyes. I didn't notice without your glasses.
Yeah, I do. I have blue eyes, Lisa.
Yeah,
oh, that wasn't you? That was the girl.
You
I thought that was you talking
eyes.
To me. I know. I
oh.
just wish I did.
Oh.
All right, so... If you know who that is, give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back with the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
Wow, great reflexes. Thanks.
No problem.
Hey, you have blue eyes. I didn't notice without your glasses.
Let's talk to Ron from Naperville. Hey, Ron, do you have blue eyes?
Yes, I do.
Oh, right. I do, too. So there you go. Then you were meant to call in. Ron, who is that voiced?
That would be Kirsten Dunst.
That is correct. She will be also in the upcoming movie called Midnight Special. And you are a winner. You have won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza. You can visit one of their 40 Chicagoland locations and check it out at loumalnati's.com. I hope you have a great pizza on us.
Well, thank you so much. And, that sounds great.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks,
Ron.
Appreciate
your calling
in. Appreciate you calling in, listening. You know, Kirsten Dunst starred in Fargo this season. Did you see that? Fargo is unbelievable on FX. I tell you, one of the best shows on television. If you didn't get a chance to see it, folks, check it out. She was one of the leads on that this year. Last year, Billy Bob Thornton, who won for Best Supporting Actor for the series. This year, Kirsten Dunst. She was terrific. All right, so it's time now for Dangerous Assignment. This was a spy drama that starred Brian Donlevy as U.S. secret agent Steve Mitchell. He was sent to exotic foreign locations to troubleshoot for the United States government. It came to NBC Radio in 1949. It ran until 1953. Herb Butterfield played the commissioner who briefed Mitchell on his dangerous assignments each week. And it transitioned to syndicated television in the early 1950s with 39 episodes produced. You know, they wanted to bring it to television, and nobody wanted to buy it. And nobody wanted – it was a great success on radio, and nobody wanted to buy it. So Brian Donlevy used his own money and produced 39 episodes. He filmed 39 episodes of the show and took a big risk and syndicated it. And it ended up being pretty successful. He syndicated it across the country. But he believed in the series so much, he wanted to see it on television. And that's what you got to do sometimes. Mm-hmm. You got to put your money where your mouth is, as they
I've
say.
I've heard that before.
All right. So it's time now for Dangerous Assignment, August 6, 1949. It's called France, Millionaire Murders, and it stars Brian Donlevy. It's heard on NBC, part one of Dangerous Assignment.
The National Broadcasting Company brings you Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell in Dangerous Assignment. Time, 10 p.m. The place, the spacious drawing room of a villa in the south of France overlooking the Mediterranean. A stout man in a velvet dressing gown sits at the piano, his stubby fingers gliding expertly over the keys.
Come in, Philippe. I thought you were Philippe, my butler.
You were wrong, Baranko.
Who are you? And how did you get into my villa?
I am called Dominic, and I walked in.
But what do you want?
Only a trifle, Baranko. Your life.
What?
Such a discord.
Seen him in such pictures as Canyon Passage, American Romance, and The Great McGinty. Now, here is our star, Brian Donlevy, in another two-fisted portrayal as Steve Mitchell in Dangerous Assignment.
Well, here he is, Commissioner. Guess where I found him. On second thought, better not guess.
Steve?
Hello, Commissioner. Well, where am I going this time?
Paris.
Paris. Hey, what was her name now?
Don't count on that, Steve. And no horse races either. Hmm. This isn't a pleasure trip. It's strictly business and dangerous business.
I might have known. Okay, Commissioner, let's have it.
Steve, last week a man fell down an elevator shaft in Bombay. Died instantly. 5 days ago, a private plane crashed near Stockholm. The owner also died instantly.
Oh? So there have been a couple of accidents around the world. What's that got to do with me?
We thought they were accidents at first, but night before last, a third man was murdered in his villa in the south of France, shot to death while sitting at his piano.
OK. can anyone play that bad?
Steve, there's a tie-in between these three men, one that's tremendously important to us. These dead men were all millionaires in their own countries. 2 weeks ago, seven of them met to plan a giant merger.
What kind of a merger?
They pooled all their capital to form a holding company which would finance industrial expansion in backward countries.
I see.
We believe that interests hostile to the plan are obstructing it.
Well, sounds like a pretty effective way to obstruct it, all right. Killing off the partners. You say there were seven originally. That leaves four now.
Three. Last night, the killer struck again.
What?
In Paris. Two of the partners had dinner together. Marcel Laborde and the American Scott Wheeler. As they left the cafe, they were fired on. Laborde was killed.
You know, I'm beginning to think you've got a nice, safe job picked out for me, Commissioner. I get to play bodyguard, huh?
As usual, you'll pose as a foreign correspondent after an interview with the American Scott Wheeler. Actually, your job is to protect him and the other surviving partners and to get to the bottom of these killings.
Where's this Scott Wheeler staying?
At the Hotel Brevent. That will be your first stop in Paris.
Ruth got my press credentials and passport ready?
And your plane ticket. You take off in 2 hours. Steve, we don't want anything to interfere with the plans of these men. Those killings have got to be stopped. That's your assignment, Steve. Good luck.
Ah, welcome to Hotel Bravo, monsieur. What type of accommodation would you prefer?
I'll let you know later. Right now, I'd like the number of Scott Wheeler's room here.
I beg your pardon.
Hello.
You wish to see Mr. Wheeler?
That's right.
May I ask your name?
You may. I'm Steve Mitchell. I'm a foreign correspondent.
Oh, hello. I'm Martha Vaughn. May I see your credentials? Your press credentials. May I please see them?
Well, yes, I guess so. I don't quite understand.
I'm Scott Wheeler's secretary.
Oh, sure. Here they are.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. It's just that we don't wish to take any chances, particularly after the recent attempt on Mr. Wheeler's life.
Matter of fact, that's what I want to interview him about.
Oh? All right. I'll take you up to his suite, if you don't mind.
Should I mind?
Look.
We miss you.
That man who was just here... You were Steve Mitchell?
Oui, he was a friend of yours.
In a way. Thank you.
Monsieur, you wish to leave a message for him?
No. I will deliver it to him later. In person.
Go on in, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you.
Hello, Martha.
Well, Mr. Wheeler, this is Steve Mitchell. He's a foreign correspondent from the United States.
Hello.
Glad to know you, Mitchell. Meet my associate, Gordon Hemsley.
Hi.
How do you do? Well, I'll be running along, Wheeler. Ring me up as soon as Voorhees arrives, will you?
Okay.
Good day, gentlemen.
Well, what can I do for you, Mitchell?
Well, I believe he'd like a story about the shooting night before last, Mr. Wheeler.
That's right.
There's not much to tell. Laborde and I had dinner together, took a walk afterward. Laborde felt like a cognac, so we stopped in a little place called La Patate.
La Patate?
Yes.
That's slang for potato, isn't it?
Yes. They think of some strange names for their bars. Anyway, we had a drink and left. Just as we went out the door, I heard some quick footsteps behind us. I started to turn around. The next thing I knew, one bullet whistled by my ear, another one hit Laborde and killed him.
I see. I'd like to take a look at this bar where the shooting took place.
La Patate?
Yeah, where is it?
Well, it's sort of a hard place to find. Martha, why don't you show Mitchell where it is? All right with you, Mitchell.
I can't think of a guide I'd rather have, Mr. Wheeler. Thank you.
I'll try not to get you lost, Mr. Mitchell.
Would that be bad?
Come on.
So this is the potato. Sounds like a hot potato right now. That's some music.
That's what they call le jazz haute, Mr. Mitchell.
I can believe it. You know, I've got one rule with all my guides, Martha.
Mm-hmm.
They call me Steve.
All right. You sound like you've had a lot of guides. Steve?
I get lost easily. You worked for Mr. Wheeler very long, Martha?
What? About a year.
Like it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to be talking about me all of a sudden, Steve. I thought it was the attempt on Mr. Wheeler's life you were interested in.
I've got a two-track mind. Okay, I'll get back on track one. Now, as I get it, Wheeler and Laborde came here, had one drink, and left.
Yes, the shooting took place right outside. Apparently someone followed...
What's the matter?
Steve. That little man who just walked by.
What? Oh, the gent with squeaky shoes? What about him?
Well, I've noticed him hanging around the lobby of our hotel lately.
What?
Yes, and night before last, just after Mr. Wheeler and Laborde went out to dinner, he left too.
Hey, maybe we should have a talk with him.
Steve, look. He saw us watching him. He's going out the front door.
Come on.
I wonder...
What?
Nothing. Nothing. We'll talk about it later.
There he goes in that cab.
Come on. There's another cab over here.
Yeah. Driver?
Oui, monsieur. Taxi cab, huh?
Yeah. That cab. Hightailing it down the street. Don't let it out of your sight. Let's go. Squeaky Shoes knows he's being followed, all right. That cab of his is really traveling.
Steve, look. He's stopping in front of that building in the next block.
Yeah. He's running inside. Driver, pull up behind that other cab.
Oui, monsieur.
Hey, what kind of a building is this, anyway?
What? It's a museum, Steve.
Museum? Okay, we'll look inside. Some museum, Martha. Looks like King Arthur's round table.
We're in the medieval room, Steve. The armor, the weapons, and the tapestries are all from the Middle Ages.
Too many places for Squeaky Shoes to hide. Look at all those drapes.
He's got to be in here somewhere, Steve.
Unless there's a back door to this place.
I didn't think of that.
Boy, these suits of armor really must have been comfortable on a hot day.
Look at the battle axe with this suit.
Yeah, it reminds me of a lot of old mother-in-law jokes. Well, come on, let's go.
Oh, Steve, watch out!
Huh?
The armor, the battle axe, it's falling.
Hey! Oh, oh.
Steve, you all right?
Yeah. Oh. I almost got a haircut the hard way. Look, help me get this tin tuxedo off me.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh,
Somebody behind the drape shoved it over. He's probably long gone by now. Well, come on, Martha. Let's go back to Wheeler's suite. Mr. Wheeler, I think it's time we laid a few cards on the table. I'm not just after a story. I've been assigned to investigate these killings. Here are my credentials.
I see.
Mr. Wheeler, in that case, I'd better tell Mr. Mitchell what I was going to tell you.
What do you mean, Martha?
The little man with the squeaky shoes. Yesterday, I saw him at the door to Mr. Hemsley's suite, like he'd just come out.
What?
You sure about that, Martha?
Later, I saw him go into a rooming house across the street.
Mr. Wheeler, this squeaky shoes boy could be the one who took a shot at you and Laborde the other night.
But what would he be doing in Hemsley's room?
I don't know yet. Come on, Martha. Let's take a look at that rooming house.
Come on, Lisa. Let's go check out that rooming house and see if the squeaky man's, the guy with the squeaky shoes is there.
Oh, that sounds fun.
He's a little man with squeaky shoes.
Is that you?
Now, I used to wear platform shoes as a kid.
That's
attractive. Let's think back to those days, the 1970s. I'll never forget when the movie Saturday Night Fever came out. Man, I bought a pair of platform shoes so fast. And I had a silk shirt and silk pants.
Was it blue?
I
pictured
chain.
The silk shirt
no,
being blue.
My silk
powder
shirt
blue?
Was my. I had a brown silk shirt and a white silk shirt.
Okay.
And then I had brown silk pants.
Oh.
Yeah, and then I had, and they were bell bottom.
Of course.
Yeah, and then I had white platform shoes.
White.
That I begged my mother to buy me. And she was like, "You will twist your ankle. You will." And I said, "No, no, no." And yeah, the very first time I wore them, I twisted my ankle. I didn't let her know that though. She's probably just hearing this now, and figuring it out because she listens to the show.
So how'd you do with the ladies?
Oh man, real good.
Oh good.
Yeah, really good.
Because that sounds like a very, you know, attractive ensemble.
It was a good look. I had like the gold chains, Italian horn. Yeah, I'm Italian. Right. The gold horn. And it was weird. I had kind of curly hair back then. It's not anymore. It's straight. But it was curly back then. I don't know.
What color was it?
Brown. Dark brown. And I was much thinner. Uh-huh. I'll say that. I should post a picture. Should I post a picture on the Facebook?
I don't know.
Yeah, we should save it for like a throwback Thursday.
Should I send
on a Thursday.
Should
we'll
I send it to you, Mike? Will you post it? I can send it to you on a break here. Yeah. No, put it up.
He doesn't understand the ways of Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah.
No? What?
Thursday.
Well, we're talking about it now, so maybe we'll put it up.
And maybe people will not be able to wait until Thursday to see that.
Well,
they might get overexcited.
We can put it up. I'll send it to you. Just pop it up there. That was the look back then, you know, in the 19th Saturday Night Fever changed my whole life.
You wanted to be John Travolta?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then that movie really, well, it was cool. I mean, it was the disco era, you know. Do you remember the disco era?
I do. I remember it well.
And then
I'm much older than I look.
Really? Uh-huh. Oh, I was into disco back then. I had a disco ball in my basement.
I had a disco ball.
Did you? Mm-hmm. I had a disco ball. I had a
Did you have lava lamps?
I don't know if I had a lava lamp, but I had
strobe lights.
Did you? I had
Those
strobe
were
lights.
Very big.
Yeah, and I had incense.
I had incense
in my basement.
We have the same. We have the same basement.
Yeah, my basement was kind of a lair, you know. It was pretty hip, you know, hip to be square.
How did it work out for you?
It worked out pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, pretty well. And it was dark down there. Yeah.
Dark in the basement?
It was very dark in the basement.
That might be a good thing.
I had a couch that we've since donated to the Smithsonian Institute. Mm. You know, it was leather. Yeah, leather couch.
I like
down
a leather
there.
Couch.
Yeah, it was a leather couch. And I'll never forget, those were good days. Those were good times.
Yeah, well, you know? These are good times, too.
These are good times, but those were good times, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't much of a dancer, though. You know?
Really? No. What changed?
I mean, I liked it. I just wasn't very coordinated, but, you know, did okay with the ladies, though,
good.
Back then, the good old days of the 1970s.
Good.
Ah, we could just go back to those days, you know, like with a Wayback Machine. Maybe we can get in a Wayback Machine.
A little Back to the Future.
That would be cool. I'd like that. Well, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to stop reminiscing for a little while.
All right.
We're going to listen to Dangerous Assignment. But first, it's WGN. We're going to take a quick break right here, and then we're going to do news. Thank you, Esmeralda. Appreciate that very much. And we are in the midst of tuning into Dangerous Assignment. Good old Brian Donlevy starring as Secret Agent Steve Mitchell on this episode. From August 6, 1949, it's called France, Millionaire Murderers. And I thought we'd get right back into this now. Here's part two, the conclusion of Dangerous Assignment.
I think this is it, Steve.
Looks like a real dive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But at least it's a convenient location just across the street from Hemsley's Hotel.
You think there is some connection between them, Steve?
Let's go in. Fresh air would really smell funny in here.
There don't seem to be any rooms downstairs, Steve.
Come on, we'll try the stairway.
Steve, wait. You hear that?
Yeah. Squeaky shoes.
There he is at the head of the stairs.
Hey, you. Wait a minute. I want to talk to you. Hey, what's the matter with you?
Steve, he's bleeding.
He's grabbing at his chest. Get out of the way, Martha. Here he comes. Holy smoke.
Steve, is he still breathing?
Not anymore.
The time, 30 seconds later. Steve and Martha have run up the stairs and are searching the dead man's room.
Nothing here that I can see, Steve.
Yeah, killer must have gone out the window, Martha. Still open. Well, let's go on back.
Steve, looks like the doorway is occupied.
Hmm? Oh?
I'm Inspector Brizard of the Sûreté. Your name, monsieur?
Steve Mitchell. I'm a foreign correspondent. This is Miss Martha Vaughan.
Mademoiselle?
Inspector?
Monsieur, what connection exists between you and the dead man downstairs?
Connection?
None at all.
Then what are you doing in his room?
Trying to find the guy who stabbed him a couple of minutes ago.
And you do not know the dead man at all?
I don't even know the guy's name.
It is Dominique.
Dominique? Is that supposed to mean something to me?
It does to most of the police in Europe, monsieur. Dominique was a hired killer.
Oh? You happen to know who his last boss was?
No, monsieur. But we had heard Dominique was in Paris and had trailed him here. As you see, a few moments too late.
Yeah. Well, look, Inspector, this is all very nice. But if you'll excuse me, I have a transatlantic call to put in.
You say you are a foreign correspondent, Monsieur Mitchell.
That's why the telephone call. My boss likes to hear from me now and then.
Monsieur, perhaps your interest in this affair is greater than the procuring of a mere story, and perhaps not.
Well, you've covered all the possibilities, Inspector.
In any case, you will please keep yourself available for questioning. Paris is a big city, monsieur, but I am quite capable of finding you should you choose to hide. Kindly, do not put me to the trouble.
Yes, sir.
It's Steve calling from Paris, Commissioner. He's on the line now.
Good. Hello?
Hello, Commissioner.
Steve, how are you doing?
Who knows? A few hours ago, I had a near miss with a battle axe.
What?
Oh, no one you know.
Now, Steve.
No, I mean literally, Commissioner. I had a hot lead for a while, a hired killer who needed a new pair of shoes. His name was Dominic.
Was?
Yeah. Somebody with a sharp knife beat me to him.
Any other lead, Steve?
Well, there may be a tie-in between Dominic and the Englishman, Gordon Hemsley.
What?
One of the partners. Yeah, that's right. Nothing definite on him yet. There's still someone missing from the party, a third surviving partner, Carl Voorhees. He's supposed to arrive from Amsterdam tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Why, Steve, we have information that Voorhees has been in Paris for 2 days.
Oh, that's interesting. Incidentally, Commissioner, I wish you'd check on the exact terms of that merger.
All right, Steve. Why?
Oh, just a hunch I'm working on. Cable what information you can get to me at the Hotel Brabant. I'm on my way back there now to talk to Wheeler again.
Mitchell, I'm no hero. If I'd known what this merger was going to mean, I'd never have gone into it, in spite of the good I know it'll do. But it's too late to back out now. All the papers have been signed.
I think you should leave Paris, Mr. Wheeler.
Don't worry. As soon as this meeting's over, I'm going to.
What's the timetable on the meeting, Mr. Wheeler?
Voorhees is coming in tomorrow from Amsterdam. He, Hemsley, and I are meeting tomorrow night around 10 to set a few final details. Then the quicker I get out of Paris, the better. Who?
I'll go, Mr. Wheeler. Who is it, please?
Carl Voorhees.
Voorhees?
Good evening, Wheeler.
Hello, Voorhees. I wasn't expecting you until tomorrow.
I decided to come tonight.
You know Martha?
Fräulein?
This is Steve Mitchell, a foreign correspondent.
Hello.
Mynheer Mitchell.
You say you just got in, Mr. Voorhees?
An hour ago.
That's funny. I heard you got in 2 days ago.
That is a lie.
Is it?
Mynheer Mitchell, my affairs are no concern of yours.
Where are you staying, Voorhees?
At the Continental.
Oh, just across the street.
Well, it's too late to get anything done tonight, Voorhees.
Where's Hemsley?
Hemsley, he's staying at the Splendide. I suggest we meet here in my suite tomorrow night. How about 9:30?
Yeah. I see you then, Rita.
Good night.
Good night, Fräulein. And Mynheer Mitchell.
Good night.
I wonder what he's been doing those 2 days he's been here.
So do I.
Mr. Mitchell, I'm worried. I'd appreciate it if you'd be here tomorrow night for that meeting also.
Might be a good idea.
If you could get here before the rest come, say, a little before 9:00?
Okay. Well, I'm going over to see your partner, Gordon Hemsley. You better stay in your room all day tomorrow, Mr. Wheeler. I'll see you tomorrow night, about 8:45.
Really, Mr. Mitchell, I can't say I relish being disturbed this late at night. Just because you want some sort of silly interview.
Well, I'd like at least to get a statement from you, Mr. Hemsley. 7 of you put through a merger. So far, 4 partners have been killed. That leaves just 3 of you. Yourself, Wheeler, and Voorhees.
Oh, I'll get it, Mr. Hemsley.
Right home. Very well, Mr. Mitchell, I'll give you a statement. This merger will accomplish a great deal of good. I personally intend to carry it through regardless of threats or any consequences to me.
Speaking of threats, can you throw any light on the death of a hired killer named Dominic?
Dominic? I don't know anyone by that name.
Don't you? He was seen outside your room shortly before he was killed.
Why,
Mr. Hensley.
Yes?
It's Voorhees on the telephone. He said when he was here this afternoon, he forgot to ask...
Voorhees here?
Never mind. I'll take the call. You have your statement, Mr. Mitchell. Would you please excuse me?
Sure. And thanks. See you around.
I wish I'd set this meeting earlier. What time is it, Mitchell?
9:02, Wheeler.
Oh. Care for another drink?
Thanks. Wheeler, you ever hear of a thing called a squeeze play?
Squeeze play? Oh, here's your drink.
Thanks. How sure are you of your partners, Hemsley and Voorhees?
What are you getting at, Mitchell?
They met yesterday afternoon.
What does that mean?
I'm not sure yet.
Well, I wish I'd never gotten into this deal in the first place. Come on, let's go into the drawing room. It's a little more cheerful in there.
Okay. Incidentally, I've been meaning to ask you. You say you hired Martha about a year ago.
That's right.
Who recommended her to you?
Let's see. Why, it was Hemsley. After you, Mitchell.
Where are the lights, Wheeler?
Over on the other wall.
Okay, I'll get... Yep. Head. Wheeler. Hey, you're bleeding.
Shot. Shoulder, I think.
What happened?
Don't know. Saw someone hit you on the head. I tried to dodge. Shot me in the shoulder. Then he ran out.
Okay. Ought to be a doctor in the hotel. I'll get him. Then I'll call the police.
Monsieur Mitchell, once again I find you at the scene of a crime.
Believe me, Inspector, it was not my choice either time.
You say you were unconscious when Monsieur Wheeler was shot. Have you any idea how long you were unconscious?
Just a few seconds. I heard the clock start to strike 9 as I walked into this room, and it was still striking when I came to.
That stain and broken glass on the carpet, what do they represent?
Well, part of the glass is from my wristwatch, I guess. The rest of it... and the stain are from the drink I was holding in my hand when I got slugged.
Steve, what's happened?
Martha. Well, Hemsley.
The gendarme at the door said something about a shooting, Mitchell.
Yeah, Wheeler was shot.
What? Oh, Steve, is he still alive?
Yeah, he's in the next room with the doctor. He's going to be all right. I just think it's a flesh wound.
Oh.
Well, that's good news.
Is it, Hemsley?
What do you mean by that, Mitchell?
Skip it.
Permit me, I am Inspector Brizak of the Sûreté. Did you two come over here together?
Why, no, we just happened to arrive together, Inspector.
I see.
My room is just down the hall.
Permit me to inquire as to your movements for the past hour.
Why, I was in my room reading.
And Mademoiselle has a witness?
What? No.
And you, Monsieur Hemsley?
Wheeler had scheduled a meeting for 9:30. I waited in my hotel until it was time to come over. Then I came over.
So,
incidentally, where's Carl Voorhees?
Why, I expected to find him here for the meeting.
I will answer. Brizak speaking. Oui, Giraud. What is that? So, you are sure of the time? Merci. At 9:00, Monsieur Voorhees called room service for some ice. When the boy arrived, 5 minutes later, he found Voorhees with a bullet through his heart. It is indeed a perplexing case, Mitchell. Our killer moves very fast. He shoots Monsieur Wheeler and kills Monsieur Voorhees all in the space of 10 minutes.
Yeah. Of course, for he slipped just down the street from Wheeler.
Mm.
Oh, it is my turn to buy the drinks, Mr.
Oh, I've still got some here. I think I'll just have a little ice in it.
As you prefer.
Hey.
Monsieur?
How long has it been since our last drink?
20, perhaps 30 minutes.
Yeah. Look, Inspector, you asked me about that stain on the carpet of Wheeler's drawing room. I said it was broken glass and liquor.
That is correct, Mitchell.
Was there any ice on the carpet?
No, there was not.
Hmm. Inspector, half an hour ago, I got a cable from the commissioner. Here, take a look at it. Hmm.
Terms of merger such that in event of one partner's death, his voting interest passes to survivors.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you'll round up everyone in Wheeler's room in a few minutes, I think I can deliver you one grade A killer. How's the shoulder, Mr. Wheeler?
Coming along, but I don't understand the purpose of this meeting.
What's it all about, Steve?
Yes, being summoned here like fugitives from justice.
Monsieur Mitchell is host at this gathering. He will explain.
And I'll make it short. The person who shot Mr. Wheeler in the shoulder and killed Voorhees is undoubtedly the same one who hired Dominic to kill the other partners.
You mean one man's behind this whole thing, Steve?
One man. Or woman, Martha. Hmm? I'd like to show you how that killer arranged the shootings tonight. Mr. Wheeler, this clock that was striking when I got slugged, has it been running okay lately?
Why, yes, it has. Matter of fact, Martha took it to be fixed a couple of days ago.
I see.
Well, I don't see, Steve. What are you driving at?
When I got knocked out, the clock was striking 9. When I came to, it was still striking, so I figured I'd just been out a few seconds. Actually, I was unconscious nearly 20 minutes. Long enough for the killer to get to Voorhees' hotel, kill him, come back, reset the clock, and then shoot himself in the shoulder.
What?
I say. What about it, Monsieur Wheeler?
I'm afraid Mr. Mitchell's imagination is working overtime. Mitchell, do you actually think I'd shoot myself?
If the stakes were high enough, and in this deal they are. You'd already knocked off 4 of your partners. That left only Voorhees and Hemsley in your way.
I say, Voorhees and I were getting a little suspicious of Wheeler. We met yesterday afternoon to talk about it.
My patience with your sense of humor is wearing thin, Mitchell. You're making a lot of statements that would be very difficult to prove.
You're wrong there. I can prove most of them with the help of just one ice cube.
Ice cube?
Yeah. When I came to, all the ice in my drink had melted. Yet just now, down in the bar, it took the ice in my drink almost 20 minutes to melt.
Well, Monsieur Wheeler,
But it'd be kind of hard to explain that away, wouldn't it, Wheeler? Wouldn't it?
I have nothing to say until I've seen my lawyers. Oh,
that can be easily arranged, monsieur. They will find it easy to locate you. You will be in prison.
Going to have some time to play in Paris, Steve?
I'm afraid not, Martha.
Too bad. Take a look at the newspaper. It's full of things to do, places to go. We could have a lot of fun.
You don't have to sell me on that. Hey, look at this picture of the horse race.
Well, what about it?
Well, the horses are running in the wrong direction.
What? Oh, no, that's the way they do over here, Steve. The horses run clockwise instead of counterclockwise, like in the States.
You know something?
What?
I think I'd better stay here a couple of days after all.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. The way I pick horses, I could clean up a fortune.
Aw.
Mine always run backwards.
You have just heard the 5th in an exciting new adventure series, Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell. Dangerous Assignment is written by Bob Reif and directed by Bill Karn, with music by Bruce Ashley. Be with us again next week at this same time when Brian Donlevy, starring as Steve Mitchell, will embark on another Dangerous Assignment. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's Dangerous Assignment from August 6, 1949, with France Millionaire Murders, starring Brian Donlevy, as heard on NBC. Let's take a quick break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Nick DiGilio is in the house. Here he is, right there.
Hey.
What's up, Nick? You know, we just posted a picture of me in my disco costume. Did you ever have anything like that when you were a kid?
I don't even want to discuss.
Were you a disco guy at all?
No.
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 I was, in fact, I was at Disco Demolition. I had a Disco Sucks t-shirt.
I was crying that day.
Were you?
Yeah.
I was a member of
Comiskey Park, right?
I was there, yeah.
Yeah, Steve Dahl.
Yep, I brought... Because it was the deal was if you brought a disco record in, you got in for 98 cents.
There you go.
Because it was the Loop 98. That was pre-digital days.
Oh gosh!
So I brought the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever, got in for 98 cents, and
rest
is history.
You and I are very similar. We're both in radio. We both love classic radio, TV, and movies. But I loved disco, and you didn't.
No, well, you know what? Secretly, I did.
Okay,
and I do now. I mean, I love disco. I think disco's great. But you know, when you're 13 years old, and you hang out with burnouts who blow a lot of weed and listen to Zeppelin, you can't admit that you like the Bee Gees.
Right.
It's kind of against the law to do that.
Yes, yes. So. Well, I posted a picture of my disco days. It's up there on our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and then search WGN Radio Theater. Please like us. We would love to be liked. We have a fraction of the likes that we would like to have. We want a bunch more, so please do that. So, Nick, great to see you.
Thanks, man.
What's happening on the show this morning?
Movie reviews for the weekend. Some really bad films came out this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The single worst performance in the worst movie that Robert De Niro has ever been a part of.
Oh, no. What movie is that?
It's called Dirty Grandpa.
Oh, that's with Zac Efron. Yeah.
It is as horrible and embarrassing as you'll ever see.
Really?
Yeah.
My idol? You know, he's my idol,
well,
De Niro.
You know, I was after I saw the movie, I looked at his filmography, at his list, and in the last 16 or 17 years, with the exception of the movies that he makes with David O. Russell, that include Joy and American Hustle and Silver Linings Playbook, and this movie called Stone that he did probably about 6 years ago with Edward Norton.
Yeah.
It's grim. You look back at the movies he's made, 16, 17 years, awful. Awful. But this is the worst. You know, he made a movie called Godsend back in 2005, horror movie, which I thought was the most embarrassing performance he's ever given. And I thought that until Friday.
Wow.
When I saw Dirty Grandpa.
Wow.
But we have some interesting stuff to talk about with Eric Childress. Eric Childress is at Sundance right now.
Okay.
So we'll get a live report from Sundance telling us about the movies that he's seen.
Very, very cool.